Chapter 14. Ed Keller said he would look into the situation at the dump, but I knew at that point that he didn't want any more to do with us. The big battles had been lost here a long time ago. The cards were stacked against us. I knew that we could still find evidence of the leaks if we wanted to take some more water samples, but I also knew that it wouldn't matter. No matter what we found out, there wouldn't be enough people around here willing to care, willing to stick their necks out and fight this thing. I refused to talk about it with my parents. My dad had finished his resume and told me he had a talk with a company out west. People out there still care about the environment. It's not like here. Here it's too late. I wasn't going to give him the sad satisfaction of hearing about my day. I think it might turn out to be the same everywhere, I told him. I don't think it's going to be any different. Besides, I'm staying. I'm not moving. I was thinking about Marina. Nothing like her had ever happened in my life. Nothing out west could uproot me from Rocky Harbor. That got my old man really jangled, and I felt a little guilty. But my life was one big confusing maze these days. I couldn't help it if I didn't have much sympathy for my old man. I went to work the next morning and discovered that my boss, Bud Guilfoy, had seen me in the car with Ed Keller that day before. "I'm sorry, Mr. Guilfoy," I told him. "Something came up. It was very important." Guilfoy looked at me like I had just thrown up on his desk or something. I needed this job if I had plans to hang around after my parents were gone. It was time to grovel. "I'll work today for free. I'll wash every window of every car that pulls in here. I'll change tires. I'll do the work of two pump jockeys. Just watch. And I don't want to pay me for a cent. That's my form of apology." Suddenly, Guilfoy smiled. "I like your attitude, son," he said. "You're willing to admit you made a mistake. That's good. Now I hope you don't mind getting a little messy, because I also want you to change the oil in my car and those four trucks out back. Then I want you to spray undercoating on my mother-in-law's Plymouth. After that, I want to see the toilet scrubbed clean as a whistle. And all the while, if you hear a car driving, you better be out there pumping gas like your life depending on it. Can you handle that?" "Yes, sir," I said. "Thank you, sir." Guilfoy smiled a devilish grin at me and repeated again, "Yep, I like your attitude." At the end of my morning shift, I was covered in grease and oil and I felt like crap, but I knew that I had made amends for skipping a day's work and lying about it. I was in the washroom trying to get the scrub off with waterless soap when Bud stuck his head through the door and said, "You done good, Chris. My conscience tells me I'm going to have to pay for you today. Just tell me this, what the heck were you doing riding around with the county councillor?" "I wanted him to see the landfill," I said. "It was polluting the groundwater and killed some ducks. I wanted to keep my explanation simple." Guilfoy shook his head. "That's not good. I like the shout ducks. You make sure they don't go killing off those ducks or I won't have any Christmas dinner." But he was smiling like it was a big joke. I decided not to tell him what I thought about hunters. I rode my bike on down to Marina's house. No car was in the driveway. Nobody was home. Jack looked up at me from his cage and shrieked a mighty loud hello. I knew what he wanted. He wanted another crack at the artificial wing and a trip up in the sky. When I went to the back door, I saw a note taped to the glass. It was written in haste by Marina and barely legible. "Chris, my dad took a bad turn. We had to take him to Memorial Hospital, Marina. Memorial was 30 miles away. I knew she needed me, and I had to get there. Now, I ran out to the highway and stuck out my thumb. Three cars passed, but none of them stopped. I started jogging down the road. I knew I couldn't run all the way there, but I just felt that I couldn't stand here and wait. I wanted to be with Marina. Two more cars passed me by even though I stuck out my arms and waved like crazy. They probably thought I was just that crazy. I was getting desperate when I saw the Purolator truck coming over a rise in the road. I made a quick prayer that the guy had good brakes and decent reflexes. I jumped out in front of the oncoming van and waved for him to stop. He slammed on the brakes and burned off some good tire thread coming to a stop. "You lose your mind, kid?" he screamed at me. "Please," I said, "I've got to get to Memorial Hospital. My girlfriend's there with her father. It's really important. I have to be there." The guy looked me over. "It was you and the girl with the dead birds, right?" "Yeah," I said. "Can you give me a ride? I'm not supposed to have any passengers. In fact, I caught hell for taking those dead birds to the lab. We're not supposed to transport poultry." "Come on, man, please, I need to get there." He leaned over and unlocked the passenger door. "Get in. If I get in trouble, I'll be looking for you." "Thanks." I found Marina on the third floor. When her mother saw me coming, she got up and came to me. "Thanks for coming, Chris. Sit with Marina for a while. I'm going to talk to the doctor." Marina had been crying. I put my arm around her, not quite sure if it was the right thing to do. "Are you all right?" "No, I'm not all right," she said. "His cancer is worse, much worse." "Just take it easy," I said. "I'm sure there's something they can do." She shook her head. "I know you're just saying that. You don't know what we've done through already. My father came back here to Rocky Harbor because he was dying. You can't possibly understand." I had nothing to say. She was right. I didn't know, and all I had were cliches. I wanted to help, but there was absolutely nothing for me to do except but be there with her. "I wish I could help." "Just hold me," she said. "Just hold me." I was still holding her when Mrs. Ryson came back. "Go in and see him," she said, looking at us. I let go of Marina, and she got up to follow her mother. "You too," she said, "unless you don't want to. He'd like to see you, Chris." I followed Mrs. Ryson into a room and saw her husband in a bed lying flat on his back. He had tubes going in through his arm and one going up his nose. A monitoring machine of some sort was beeping. I knew for sure that I was looking at a dying man. Marina put her head down on her father's chest and his hand came up to stroke her hair. I had never known this man when he was healthy, and I hadn't been around for this long and painful decline, but I knew that I cared about him. Ever since I'd seen his miracle with Jack, I knew this guy was amazing. He wanted to say something, and he was looking at me. He whispered first to Marina. "He wants to talk to you, Chris," she said. "He wants to speak to you alone." Mr. Ryerson seemed a little baffled, but she led her daughter outside. I pulled up a chair and sat real close to Mr. Ryerson. He was breathing hard. Every breath was a struggle for him. "I'm glad you came," he told me in a quavering voice. "How do you feel?" I asked. I wasn't just trying to make smallpox. I wanted to know how much it hurt. "The drugs deadened the pain, but my mind is sharp. I don't know how long that will last. That's why I wanted you and me to talk." "I'll do anything," he nodded his head. "Good. You already answered my first question. Do you know why I came back to live at Rocky Harbor?" I knew what Marina had told me, but I couldn't bring myself to say it. "No," I said. "I mean, I'm not sure. It's okay. I came back to die. That part you know, and it's true. But there's more. There's you. I don't know what you mean." "Marina says you're different from others. You care about things, like the way you saved Jack. You try to help." "I don't think I have any choice. That's what I mean. Marina is the same way. She always was. I want you to hang around and help. She's going to need you." "I'll be there," I said, and I knew just then that all my threats to let my parents move off west without me would have to be made good. I couldn't move. Mr. Ryerson took my hand and tried to give it a squeeze, but he was weak. "Dying is the easy part," he said. "It's life that's hard." I felt dizzy for a second as a wave of something powerful swept over me. Mr. Ryerson looked much weaker. I could sense him losing ground and knew I couldn't be the one here with him if he was to go now. I opened the door and held it for Marina and her mother to come in. Then sat myself down on the hospital hallway floor just outside the door and waited. When I heard Mrs. Ryerson let out a painful cry, I knew that the time had come. A doctor rushed into the room, but I just sat there feeling the cold concrete under my butt. I wasn't ready to move.